Okay, Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And we are once again off and running on Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. This program is, of course, live. Very few of them aren't. It is the 16th day of February 2016. And yes, headonradionetwork.com is our home. That's where you go to jump into the chat room, where longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderators Lottie and Sparky, who is a third stage guild navigator and has folded space to become Man Cave, presently await you alongside our good friend Anatole and Mr. Gibson, just now wandering into the room. More will be along later. Yes. Thank you. Thank you to Tom at FYINation.com, and thank you to Queen of the Minions, Carol Baker. Audio is reaching. Wait a minute. Would it be better if I said this is an emergency transmission? No, there's no way anything's ever... You know what? If somebody says, this is your check for $1 million. You know, some of the fun of $1 million is going to be sucked right out by the this part of it. I mean, Jesus God. Hey, good evening, labor man and king of cups. Welcome along. See, that's the way it works. We get around six-ish and people wander by. I think sometimes folks just wait to see if I'm actually going to be able to get all the buttons pushed and get everything to work. And all the buttons have been pushed. The third switch has been thrown. And yes, things are working out quite nicely. Like I said, we've got a Titanic Tuesday ahead of us here. Holy jabbers! Yeah. Hi. Before Tim can say who the are you? Hi. I'm Bob Kincaid. Yes, I really, really am. And this is, of course, a listener-supported project that has been chugging along for more than 10 years now. Mm-hmm. And so I want to immediately send out thanks. You know, we closed the program last night with a bit of a deficit. And so I want to extend thanks to our subscribers. Thank you, Reinhard. And thank you, Dave. And thanks very kindly to Glenn, all of whom are subscribers to The Horn at various levels. And they cleared out a big chunk of the deficit last night, leaving us with a very brief one. And then, lo and behold, earlier this afternoon, much to my delight, I got a notification from our good friend Janie in Texas. And so I can happily announce that this evening, we have only $150 to raise, not the usual $200. We've got $150 to raise this evening, 15 at 10, 10 at 15, 1 at 150, 2 at 75. Oh, dear God, 4 at 37.50. And I'm not going to do 8, 16, or 32 because it's too early to make my brain hurt that bad. But, yes, we got $150 to raise this evening, and that's even better than having to only raise $200. You guys are beginning to gang up. So Tim's not here to say who the hell are you. Well, off to my left, there's Carol Baker. But who the hell is this? See, that's part of my great, big, gigantic, honking ego that makes me think that everybody hears my... Oh, that's Bob. No. This is real broadcasting, damn it. You have to say, hi, my name is. It's the audio version of one of those stickers you wear at conferences where they won't spring for an actual name tag. Got to scrawl it with a Sharpie. Yeah, exactly. Had a nice note from our buddy Scott in Sweden. Subject line was well done regarding last night's filibobster. Talking about me and us and we talking about the death of Scalia. Our buddy Scott says, you didn't chortle, but you did expose that SOB's atrocious record with a nice sense of justified indignation and anger over the damage that fool has wrought. We are so much better off without that fascist on the court. As for President Not Sure, that leopard's spots haven't changed in 7 years, so his not using the not-in-session recess appointment and giving the GOP a break is so in keeping with his record that I'll only miss him if and when we get any GOPers, Prez, or his doppelganger Hillary. One just knows that whatever person President Not Sure nominates will be a concession to the right coming out of the gate. Poor Obama's like a battered spouse, always seeking the approval of the abusive partner. Not a lot to disagree with there. Granted, if we wind up with President Ayatollah Ted or President Little Marco or President Chebya, really, or President T-Rump, President Obama's going to look pretty damn good in the rearview mirror, kind of the way Bill Clinton did looking back from President W. And admit it, he did. We missed him. I mean, hell, I voted for Bill Clinton twice. But that does not create an incumbency upon me to vote for Hillary, unless she's the nominee in November. And I'm standing by that. Her supporters are making that extremely difficult to do. But I'm standing by my word. Another note coming from Randy in Ohio. Subject line, last night's program. Hey, Bob, just to thank you for last night's program. Just finished my podcast and loved it. A 2-hour and 11-minute filibobster was fantastic. And again, I thank you. Another thanks for mentioning us subscribers. Good feeling when you know you're on when you're part of the program. Take care. Keep up the great work. Randy from Ohio, Stan. Thank you, Randy. Thank you very kindly. So, I wasn't kidding. This really is going to be an epic Titanic Tuesday. I'll be candid. Those 3-hour filibobsters kind of take it out of you. Yeah, I was licked at the end of the program last night. I mean, no, not I just ran back from marathon, you know, with the whole go tell the what a Spartans whatever BS, but no, it's tiring. So, I don't plan on doing that again this evening, but you know, who knows? We may wind up doing that simply because, well, damn. I mean, we've got an embarrassment of riches in, and yeah, you remember, you know, of course, what Titanic Tuesday is all about. Of course. Titanic Tuesday, of course, is named for something that our buddy Jim heard years and years ago in America's fifth smallest radio market, Beckley, when the right-wing monotone was holding forth, and in order to save the community from having the newspaper read to them yet again that morning, one of his mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing followers called up and said, Steve, how come you reckon it is that there is seashells in rocks in West Virginia, because we ain't nowhere near the ocean? To which the monotone confidently responded, well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates. Mm-hmm. Still no word. No word whatsoever on the movement of the Titanic coffee spoons. Mm-mm. Hey, look, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Thomas. Thomas says, hey, where's the sofa bed commercial and the ad for the storable food? What about the pudding in a bucket? How about the bucket full of potato soup for the end times, huh? None of that here. Nope. Maybe, if, I don't know. No, I can't see that ever happening. Honest to God, I can't. But really, potato soup in a bucket? Now, Agnes makes potato soup in a crock pot. It's awesome. She made some French onion soup in the crock pot the other day that was not to be believed. I mean, it was amazing. So, yeah. Yeah, thank you, Carol. That's very kind. That's downright sweet of you to say it in regard to the three-hour filibuster. Carol said, yeah, but you were good. Sometimes you have to go all in when it's important. And you do. And this is the follow-up to that. Because it takes a little while for certain things to percolate through into the system and make it, make certain things reach. So that we can then deconstruct, dissect, attempt to understand them. You don't want to hear this sneeze. I'd kind of like to, but it won't. Damn it! Ah! Ah! Oh, and I had, by the way, I also had a lovely note from Les up in Massachusetts, who heard yesterday's filibobster and even went so far as to pass it on to a dear friend of his, a recently retired chair of a university classics department. I guess just to prove to him that there are people out there who still, even though they might be hillbillies, talk about classical civilization and somehow manage to relate it to the modern era. Bibulus, you prick. That's okay. He undid himself. I mean, he was his own undoing. Because even the optimates didn't like him. They just let him, they tolerated him. But we have a lot of bibuli. Hi. With whom to deal. The right wing is absolutely afire. With wild ass the theories and whatnot about what exactly happened there on that ranch in Cibolo, Texas. I'm still working on the parody lyric. I don't know if I'm going to finish it or not. Starts out, and I won't sing because I've been told about the singing. Out on the West Texas ranch of Cibolo, I found the corpse of a fat right-wing pig. Those are the first two lines. You can guess the song. Or the original artist. But no, they are... Whatever it is that passes for minds, they're losing it. For instance, there's a cat named Jay Sekulo. Sekulo. I miss the days of pronouncers. Made life so much easier. And he is apparently the chief counsel of a right-wing hate group called the American Center for Law and Justice. And he, like I, attempted to offer some sort of an analysis of Article 2, Section 2 of the Constitution. His required a little bit more gymnastics, though. It was earlier today on the 700 Club that Funiculi showed up. This is what happened.
There have been several people. One of them is an Indian. He actually was born in India, and he's...
Yeah, one of them is an Indian. Where's my applesauce? An Indian. Where's Indians? No. I don't mean Cherokee. I mean one of those Indian Indians. Born in India. Jay? Applesauce? What?
When it starts out this way for former liquor supply officer Marion Robertson, it's not going to get any easier anytime soon. Jesus.
He actually was born in India, and he's been put up as a potential. A number of them seem to be sitting on the D.C. circuit. What do you think? I mean, is Obama going to put somebody up and then we'll have a big clash? Mitch McConnell says, no way. I think he's right. They shouldn't rush somebody on.
They shouldn't rush somebody because, you know, you can't trust three-fifths of a president. It's bad enough we let him put that... That Puerto Rican lady on. What were you thinking? You know, I love those reruns of Murder, She Wrote. I can see the same one 6 or 7 times. I never remember who did it. We can't be following the Constitution now, not too closely, because Scalia was an originalist, and he was the last originalist. He was the originalist. And I was watching another movie, and some feller kept hollering, "There can be only one," and there can be. There can only be one originalist, and now that he's gone, we can't be originally following the original words of the Constitution, because Jesus, or applesauce, I'm not sure.
Till the next president, what do you think?
I think Obama's going to put somebody up, but I think the Senate Judiciary Committee just has to say no. The precedent's there for this, Pat. There hasn't been a confirmation when there's been an appointment during an election year since 1880. So this idea, sure, the president has the constitutional right to nominate, but the Senate has the right of advice and consent. It's not what Bernie Sanders said, which is this idea that you simply... the president appoints and you confirm. That's not the way the law is. So I think the fight has to be not...
Interesting distinction there. You have Bernie Sanders, a sitting member of the United States Senate, who knows a little bit, by definition thereby, of, you know, being Senate-y, versus Jay Sekulow. He says no. And of course, I guess we're just going to kind of blow by the recess appointments of three of them, of Eisenhower, and we're going to blow right past the nomination and confirmation of that Kennedy kid back in 1988 when Reagan's brain was well on the way to turning into Swiss cheese. Never mind.
Non-existent. The Republicans in the Senate, in this last year of a presidency, even less than a year, have to just say no.
You know, I noticed...
people of America have a voice in this.
I noticed that there's some literature. One of the Democratic groups really wrote a memo saying that a president within the last year of his term in an election year should not appoint. Have you run across that where the Democrats actually said that?
Well, I haven't seen the Democratic memo on it. I'm just looking at history. And history says since 1880, Rutherford B. Hayes, no one has had a appointment and confirmation in the last year of their presidency. And here, Pat, we're talking about the last...
Except for Ronnie Reagan, but he's special because he's actually part... He's the fourth part of the Trinity. I mean, there's God the Father, Jesus the Son, the Holy Spirit, and Ronnie Reagan, which makes it a nice little A, B, C, B... rhyme scheme. God the Father, Jesus the Son, the Holy Spirit, and Ronnie Reagan. A, B, C, B. Right? Yep, right, yep. And that Kennedy kid. Yeah, well, what the hell does history matter? Huh? I mean, they're friends of Jesus. Lying is their job. They're evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexuals. They don't even tell the truth to each other. Fuck. But he's only judging history. He hasn't seen any memos that former liquor supply officer Marion Robertson may have imagined anywhere along the way, or thought he saw, or mistook a phone book for, or no. Are there still phone books? Applesauce is beginning to sound pretty goddamn good.
That's what, 11 and a half, 10 and a half, 11 and a half months. So this idea that somehow the president, sure, he has the right to do it. I expect he's going to make a nominee, appoint a nominee. The Republicans need to say no. It's that simple. Just say no.
Now that, however, is interesting because he's at odds with chinless Addison Mitch McConnell, who says, no, there will not even be a hearing. Because in order to say no, you have to take a vote. And that is, I got to live in reality world. Constitutional reality world, and the Constitution says shall, and shall applies both to the Senate and to the President. He shall nominate and with and by the advice and consent of the Senate shall appoint, ... judges of the Supreme Court. Hey, you know who else, just because history is fun, you know who else was a final year nominee to the Supreme Court? And people like pastor, brother, governor, former presidential candidate, diabetes cure snake oil salesman Mike Huckabee will recognize this. John Marshall. Mm-hmm. Thomas Jefferson's cousin. John Adams nominated him just a little bit before Thomas Jefferson could become president. John Marshall was Thomas Jefferson's cousin, but they weren't kissing. They didn't like each other. Jefferson was shy and retiring and reticent and maybe a little nuts. Brilliant, but, you know, that's one of those either side of a very thin, fine line kind of things. Didn't like going out in public, spoke in a whispering, reedy voice. Whereas John Marshall was a Federalist and a bon vivant and a man of much learning and letters and widely traveled. We have a state park not far from me here whose original name was Marshall's Pillars, because he came and visited it. Presumably was one of the first white folks to see it. The guy got around. And he would go on and, among other things, create the idea that the Supreme Court is really a fully functioning third branch of government with all the rights and duties appurtenant thereunto to his successors and assigns forever. God, when you get trapped in one of those legalism feedback loops, you're fucked. But he was. But that was 1800. And Jay Sekulow, I have Lo Lao, Funiculi, Funiculi. Well, he can 1880. He's got 1988. Not so much.
We haven't had a late term appointment since the 1880 in Rutherford B. Hayes. Yeah, what about Kennedy? Doesn't count. Reagan did it. Not my fault if the Democrats in the Senate were a bunch of sissies.
Yeah, who is, by the way, though, I mean, I can't even say his name. Who the is this guy? Well, it turns out that if you want somebody to opine about Uncle Nino, although I gotta tell you that our buddy Michael in Madison has made me rethink not using Fat Tony. What'd you say, Tone? It's hot down there. You're sweating harder than Marco Rubio in a debate. Yeah, well, get used to it, pal. There's gonna have to be the number of candles it would take burning to get you out of there. Well, we have a global warming problem, Nino. So I don't know. I'd get a pair of Bermuda shorts and get comfortable if I were you. So in November 2005, the Legal Times published an article. And in that article, they alleged that, Sekulow, Lo, quote, through the ACLJ, that's his org, and a string of interconnected nonprofits and for-profit entities, has built a financial empire that generates millions of dollars a year and supports a lavish lifestyle complete with multiple homes, chauffeur-driven cars, and a private jet. There's always a jet, isn't there? But wait, he's not a preacher. Hey, there's hope! Including a private jet, and this is the part where you pay attention, that he once used to ferry Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia. Mm-hmm. His former donors and supporters note that Sekulow engaged in a pattern of self-dealing to finance his high-flying lifestyle. Well, you know, 36,000 feet is pretty high. According to a ranking by the American Institute of Philanthropy, a charity watchdog group, Sekulow was the 13th highest-paid executive of a charitable organization in the United States. Wonder how that compares with, say, Joel Osteen. But yeah, he took Uncle Nino on one of those famous free plane trips. Oh God, that was worth the wait. So, and by the way, Robert in Morgantown points out that the ACLJ is a direct spawn of the Pat Robertson Law School. Yeah, the 700 Club School of Law, otherwise known as Regent Universiti. Yeah. Brother Deacon Asa says, please refrain from doing the applesauce, Bob. If I bust a gut, I'm suing the horn for medical expenses, and you could lose the Learjet. Yeah. But at least this clown acknowledges that there needs to be a hearing. You know what? You know what? You know why Addison's hollering there will be no hearing? There will be no hearing. Because he's afraid that somebody will break ranks. Because, see, you've got some senators out there running for re-election, and they're Republicans, who might want to be able to say to the folks back home when the backlash starts, listen, it wasn't any of me. I didn't do it. I know it's a bit of a stretch to think that would be Ron Johnson in Wisconsin. Oh, that's almost a trigger. I work at the lumber mills there. Okay, I'm all better. You got Mark Kirk in Illinois. And what about John McCain? Is it possible that any of those could break ranks? Yeah, that's three. Well, but realistically, you got to get to 60. Because, well, Addison's going to insist on that. But you don't dare have hearings. Because that means you've got a nominee that you're having hearings about. And if you've got a nominee with a spotless record, then how do you vote against him or her? I mean, granted, there's Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed future king of America, son of Rafael Eduardo Cruz, the man who forgot to be an American for a very long time, who says he'll filibuster. But over what? Especially if it should turn out to be Sri Srinivasan.
We can't have one of those on our court. I mean, he'll probably want to add five or six arms to Lady Justice or something.
Huh? You see? They can't have a hearing, because if they have a hearing, they have a problem. And then elections have consequences, as they like to say. Note coming from Jennifer in Australia. What is it with these people and lies? What is it with these people and there you go. You throw that word people around pretty loosely, Jennifer. And the absence of facts. What is it with these people and Asperger's and Tourette's? What is it with these people and melanin? What is it with these people with greed, selfishness, total and complete lack of credibility, hypocrisy, and making shit up? Did I express that adequately, Jennifer? I hope so, because that's kind of where I am. So we start here. Got to have a hearing.
That's the way the rules are structured. Mm-hmm. The Senate has a role in this. Constitution says advice and consent. The advice here is don't put up a nominee when you're not only going to be the president. You're lame duck and you're only the president for 11 months.
Yeah. Don't put up a nominee. Even though, because of that shall language, not putting up a nominee opens you to impeachment. Ron in Raleigh says the ACLJ is supposed to be the conservative opposite number to the ACLU. Except unlike the ACLU, which will represent right-wingers, the ACLJ only represents members of the hard right white wing. Mm-hmm. Not exactly nonpartisan, no. Okay, Bill says it's seculo. Well, at least we've got one vote for singing. Thomas says, no, sing, Brother Bob, sing. My mama told me Jesus loves you no matter how off-key you sing, and I sing real off-key, so Jesus really loves me, even if my audience hates it. So please sing to the angels with the trumpets, loud enough for Uncle Pat to hear it without the miracle ear Benny Hinn. Lost in the Holy Spirit, signed Thomas. No. You've been outvoted, Thomas. Like I said, it's going to be a busy evening. Well, thank you, Jennifer. Jennifer says, God, yes, thanks, Bob. The release was instant, or as instant as light-speed communications via the Internet can make it. I mean, it's what, 20, 30, 40, 45 seconds of latency? And so that's a starting place, but it is by no means a finishing place. Remember Rick Wiles? I know, we could save some of this for prayer meeting Wednesday, but it's fresh. Remember Rick Wiles? Rick Wiles is the guy who lives in a neighborhood who have to put up with him walking his dog Gator and having Gator bark at the inflatable bats and spider. No, it was an inflatable spider, wasn't it? Even Gator knows when an inflatable is full of demons. Remember him saying that? Yes, of course. Well, he's got an answer for what happened to poor Antonin Scalia, cut down in youth, laid low in his prime. Mm-hmm. He's got an answer. Of what? I mean, you know this, right? It just goes, demons.
We're making the regime work harder at lying and deceiving. They have to stay later at the office to lie and deceive the public. That's what we do here. As long as the Lord protects me. As long as the Lord keeps me alive.
What?
This is a deadly gang to mess with. They're deadly. They mean business. This is about ruling the world. And they're Luciferian. They're devil worshippers. That's the other thing. Did we talk?
Damn it! The days are packed around here. I mean, they really can get pretty busy. I mean, there's propane to go get. Half and half for the decaf, because, well, I mean, you ever try to drink just straight decaf? Don't. The days, they're busy. And I forgot to go to and the liquor store's a good 30-mile round trip. Even for my favorite rot gut cheap tequila. But I gotta. Because oh well, there I am, Odysseus lashed to the mast again.
Talk about the possible occult connections to this.
We didn't mention it. I actually think you're going to talk a little bit with Steve Krell coming up here with it. But in short, Lupercalia began on February 13th.
What is that?
It's an ancient celebration that people date back to Rome, where people come together, they sacrifice dogs, goats, and they do a bunch of crazy stuff with women. It's a fertility festival.
This is an ancient pagan day. And when was it?
I guess we're going to have to do this, aren't we? Lupercalia was a Roman holiday. Lupus, wolf. Because you may recall that the origin myth of the Romans was that there were a pair of twins that were, abandoned, what have you. All kinds of ancient cultures have cautionary tales about abandoning children because, Oedipus got abandoned and he was supposed to have been killed and exposed or whatever. And the guy who didn't have the heart, so he left him with a kindly shepherd to be raised. And look how that worked out for Pappy. And Mama. Jesus. You're my mama. You're my mama. You're my mama. The Lupercalia celebrated the founding of Rome, in which a she-wolf, and by the way, Lupa was also, meaning she-wolf, was also a Roman Latin colloquialism for, prostitute. But we'll take it literally. Why not? That a she-wolf suckled two infants named Romulus and Remus. Romulus, of course, would go on to found the city of Rome, and Remus would go on to star in a wildly racist Disney half-animation, half-live-action film of the 1950s. Zippity-doo-da. Okay, that's all the singing. And so, the Lupercalia, pagan festival. Hey, there probably was some sex involved, maybe some sacrifice. Ah, but then again, this guy celebrates a religion where God tells a human being to go and kill his kid. And, you know, at the last minute, there just happens to be a ram who has his horns hung up in some bushes. Have you ever seen a ram get its horns caught up in a bushes? Ram's horns are pretty tough. And generally, if the ram goes, it gets out of the bushes and goes about its business of being a ram. But not this one. This was a really special, I guess, particularly special, stupid ram. And at the last minute, God says, I changed my mind. Instead of using that stone knife to cut out the heart of your son, why don't you just spill the blood of that there ram over there that's caught in the bushes? And I don't think it's going to make it evolutionarily in the first place anyway, because, well, it's got its horns caught in the bush. Damn ram. But of course, this guy's all freaked out that, you know, they're made. Oh, you know, I mean, there was all kinds of. We talked about Bibulus. You know, he went home, and every day Mrs. Bibulus would say, "Honey, what do you want for lunch?" And he'd say, "Well, I just cut the guts out of this chicken to take an augury." And his wife said, "I get tired of chicken. Can't you sacrifice a lamb or a ram once in a while? Mutton's not so bad, is it, Marcus Calpurnius Bibulus?" No, entrails. Got to read the entrails. Looking for signs and port. Hey, is that a flock of crows on the horizon? There goes. Let's see. Caesar said he wanted to give some land to some retired soldiers. Nope. Let's see. Half past an hourglass. Saw crows on horizon. No veterans benefits. And that's how that worked. But apparently, there in his young, spry, sprightly, in the prime of life, Nino Scalia was cut down by a Lupercalian ritual.
February 13th was the beginning of it. February 13th to the 15th.
Which was the day he died.
Yes.
Okay, the other thing, and I noticed this. The 13th was the 44th day of 2016.
Right.
Obama is the 44th president of the...
Read the book. Somewhere in these Chiricahua Hills, no white man will ever know where the Apaches buried Cochise, the leader of their great chiefs. And John Wesley Hardin once shot a man just for snoring. Read the book.
United States. So you have this numerology thing taking place. Remember Christine Lagarde dropped the zeros? Yeah, remember that speech she gave last year or so?
You know, no.
Drop the zeros, click your heels, spin around, all that weird stuff she gave in an IMF speech. I mean, these people are, they truly are into numerology.
It's their religion.
Yes.
Really?
So there are some.
I'm a pretty, you know, out not believer in traditional religion. And I mean, I run around with the, I've got friends who are Wiccans and Zoroastrians and practitioners of ancient animist ways. And so, okay. I need a numerological friend just to get everything rounded out. 44. Let's see. They won't draw the Mega Millions for a little. Maybe if I get up to the gas station for a slice of gas station pizza after the program. So I need to play 2, 13, and 44. Six more numbers, three more numbers, and we may have a winner. But which one's the Mega Ball? Oh, 44's got to be the Mega Ball because, you know, that's the number of the Obama presidency, and it's only 22 from 66, and if you add another six to that, Omaha! Let's just continue.
See this in a lot of weird stories, like the Malaysian jet that went down and disappeared. You know, there were a lot of, not the one that disappeared, but the one that crashed in Ukraine. There were a lot of numerology connections to that event.
Really?
So I've watched this over the years. Some of these really big but bizarre stories always have some numerology connection to it.
I got to interrupt for a second just to ask, do people listen to this in their cars? And if so, might this explain some of the occasional 70 or 80 car pileup when grandpa just and nods off God bless America. This guy could compete with the morning monotone over in Beckley.
It's like they sacrifice. There's always human sacrifice involved.
Always.
What else is this? What's the name of this pagan day?
Lupercalia.
And it's connected to ancient Rome?
To ancient Rome.
No, modern Rome. Fuckwits.
To what did it signify with Rome?
Well, with Rome, the Latin concept at the beginning of the word luper, lupus, for wolf, it actually signified the birth of the nation, of the Empire of Rome.
The birth of the Roman Empire.
No, dumbass.
Okay, now
Rome.
Wait a minute. I'll tell you what comes to my mind right now. All right. Washington, D.C. is full of pagan Roman sculptures.
Right. We got to quit letting this guy watch movies, okay? I mean, National Treasure may be okay for your 13-year-old, but it's not okay for Rick Wiles. This guy's going to be licking the backs of dollar bills pretty soon.
Artwork.
Freemasons!
There's a lot of pagan Roman stuff in Washington, D.C.
Naked women!
And then you have the...
aluminum naked women!
The fascist symbols. You know, the... faces? Not feces. Faces?
Right.
The bunch of... It's the sticks.
Right.
Okay?
No, no, no. I live
that
in the
is
sticks,
where we
buddy.
Get the word fascist.
Ah,
and they are in
that.
They are engraved in the U.S. Senate on the wall or the ceiling of the U.S. or it's in the Capitol building.
Somewhere. I'm
speaking here without my notes. But they're engraved.
Speaking here without a brain. I mean, Jesus.
Engraved in the U.S. Senate.
And that's where we get the word
fascism.
Really? I didn't realize that.
Yes. So the...
What is the name of this program? The Stuff I Didn't Know Hour with Rick Wiles? Get him, Gator. Get him. Woo! Carol says, we gotta stop letting this guy roam free without his handlers. Oh, okay, okay. Everybody, you want to know? I think it's okay for me to share. 11, 22, 33, 44. I know they're mastery numbers, but wait, let me think. No, wait, it's too early to think. I Googled. The numerology number 44 is about business, especially business related to building something to benefit many generations. This is not helping me pick lottery numbers, Jennifer. But sure, why not? 11, 22, 33, 30, 44, 55, 66... And we make 44 the mega ball. That's worth a buck. Answering the angry Indian here. Who is on this audio? Well, this is Rick Wiles of True News End Times Radio. Yes, they're Republicans angry. Yes, they're Christians. And angry is so steeped in this stuff. Here it comes. There it is. Back to the Freemasons who padded, if not entirely based, exactly their lodges on their understanding of Egyptian mysticism at the same time, anyway. No teaches the very same thing because the NOI, okay. Because they all come from the very same sources. Far-right tracts that can be traced back to the Russian Okhrana, the Tsarist secret police, authors of the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion. Mm-hmm. Hey, greetings everybody from the not-so-cold up to our ass in fresh snow northern outpost in Ottawa. 20 degrees over 12 hours to this point and still coming down. Oh, that's 20 inches. I got to get glasses. 20 inches over 12 hours to this point, still coming down heavy. High winds supposed to kick up in a couple of hours just to add spice to the adventure. Well, we're having a little warm spell. Mm-hmm. It's probably because we're closer to Washington, D.C., which is some sort of gateway portal to hell, according to these loons. There's only a couple of minutes left of this stupidity. Then we got more stupidity.
Birth of the Roman system, the birth of fascism, and it was on that day, the 13th.
Wow. Yeah, wow, if only that was right. The founding date of Rome is traditionally assigned to 753 BCE in April, not February, pretty sure. But the Lupercalia came. And of course, Rome wasn't an empire until Octavian bumped off Mark Antony and finished all the mopping up. And even then, he didn't call himself emperor. He maintained the fiction of the Republic. Such that, as we talked about maybe a couple of weeks ago, when the opportunity finally came for the senators to restore the Republic with the assassination of the crazier than a sprayed roach, we call him Caligula, the Senate wanted no part of having no Republic back. So instead, Uncle Claudius got to be emperor. That's just history, and history's dull, right? Forty-four, Steve in New York says, that was my waist size before I lost weight. Jim pointing out, Ronald Wilson Reagan, 666. Jim would also like to know, are the scaffolding around the Capitol Dome, are they part of the repainting of a mural depicting the apotheosis of Reagan? Don't tempt them, Jim. Don't tempt them. Ron in Raleigh simply says, wow, these guys are so full of shit, their eyes are brown. What sets me back is that there's a horse-gagging amount of money in this. Yeah, there is. Hey, by the way, did I mention that we only have to raise $150 this evening instead of the usual $200? Thanks to Janie. Yeah, that's a big deal. And, well, meanwhile, Rick Wiles lives in a nice neighborhood where he can walk his dog Gator and let him bark at the blow-up spiders. Rome. It's a good thing they cremated their dead. Because they'd be up and walking around at this stupidity. What?
Wow. Why'd you like that? So they killed a Supreme Court justice.
On the day of the birth of fascism.
Yes. And they left the pillow on his face, not because they were in a hurry to get out of the room, because they didn't have to worry. Nobody was going to call the police. Think about that. They didn't have to run. They didn't have to hurry. Nobody was going to call the police. They didn't call the police after they found a dead justice.
That's right.
So they deliberately left the pillow on his face.
Why?
As a message to everybody else. Don't mess with us. We can murder a justice and get away with it. And I assure you, there's a lot of frightened officials in Washington today.
Get one on the program.
Deep down, they know the regime murdered the justice. And they're not going to mention it. They're not even going to whisper it at the water cooler in the office. They just go about their business. That's how this works. This is the way a dictatorial, fascist, police state regime takes control of a nation.
It's like the mafia.
The mafia. Yes, exactly. Just like the mafia. You just don't.
Wait. I thought Nino was the Italian and Obama was the Kenyan. It's a tough job. Somebody's got to do it. This guy is radio gold. I'm sure nobody will own up to it. But I read the early accounts, and there was no mention of the pillow being on his face. Could it be that somebody threw a pillow over his face just to sort of hide the grisly rictus of his gaping maw? Or is that just way too prosaic? Yeah, probably that. Yeah. As Steve notes, just like we dropped a house on the Wicked Witch of the East. You'd better be careful or someone will drop a house on you. We have not yet begun to wing nut. Oh, no. Oh, no. But it's 2 minutes before the hour. And it is a Tuesday. So that means that we have the Green News Report coming up. So let's take a break. You know the numbers I trust. Skype to Skype from anywhere on the planet, Bob Kincaid Horn is the contact. Just send me a contact request and we'll be right after it. 304-574-8178 is line one. Line two, otherwise known as the stress line, is 304-663-4676. That's 304-663-HORN. They all reach the program equally well. Email, of course, bobkincaid@gmail.com, bobkincaid@gmail.com. Bob Kincaid on Facebook, @BobKincaid on Twitter. My goodness gracious, there are so many different ways to reach the program. This is listener-supported, emphasis on listeners, conversation radio. $150 to raise tonight. Hopefully that's not too much of a challenge. I'm Bob Kincaid. We'll be back. This is The Horn.
It's Tuesday, February 16, 2016.
There should have been a giant headline that said Supreme Court attacks Earth.
The sudden passing of U.S. Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia leaves U.S. climate action and the planet hanging in the balance.
Coal miners and their families who helped turn on the lights and power our factories for generations are now wondering, has our country forgotten us?
Hillary Clinton calls for assistance for coal country.
Why does the fossil fuel industry spend huge amounts of money on campaign contributions?
Bernie Sanders keeps hammering Republicans on climate change. Plus,
but listen, if you're visiting L.A. and you're feeling the burn, that just may be the methane. You know,
the worst natural gas spill in U.S. history is finally plugged.
All of those stories and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
No, they capped it. Did you hear that? They capped. We've had a horrible methane leak here. That, yeah, they finally did it. They used a combination of mud and stabilizing fluid and cement, the same stuff Trump uses on his hair.
Oh, man. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, it was just days ago we were talking about the unprecedented move by Antonin Scalia and the Supreme Court to shut down the president's landmark clean power plan. Well, now it's a whole new world, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It promises to be an epic battle over the nomination of a new justice for the U.S. Supreme Court after conservative Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia passed away over the weekend, with huge long-term implications, not just for the nation, but also for the planet. In one of his last official acts, Justice Scalia voted to put a stay on President Obama's Clean Power Plan, the first ever emission standards for the nation's polluting power plants, freezing those rules in an unprecedented ruling that implied that the right-wing majority intended to eventually overturn it.
And the reason it was unprecedented is because this case is still being heard in lower courts.
Right. And scientists warn that without the Clean Power Plan, it will be very difficult for the U.S. to meet its international emissions obligations in the historic Paris Agreement. And that has grave implications for future generations. So a shift in the balance of the deeply divided court could have very long-range consequences for the U.S. and the world. Regardless of the makeup of the future Supreme Court, and regardless of the ultimate fate of the Clean Power Plan, however, energy industry analysts say the coal industry is not coming back in the U.S., where coal as a source of electricity appears to be in terminal decline. Speaking of coal, in the most recent Democratic presidential debate, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton called for assistance for coal country, highlighting her little-known proposal to assist folks in Appalachia and other coal states with funding for the transition to renewable energy and job training.
I've come forward with, for example, a plan to revitalize coal country, the coal field communities that have been so hard hit by the changing economy, by the reduction in the use of coal. And I'm going to do everything I can to address distressed communities.
And those communities need it. You've got all of these coal workers. They could easily be retrained and given different jobs, installing solar, installing wind, making the same good living and yet not killing themselves and the planet at the same time.
Now, at that same Democratic debate and also at the Republican presidential debate over the weekend, the corporate debate media moderators failed to ask a single question about climate change or energy. So Democratic presidential candidate and Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders brought it up himself.
Why does the fossil fuel industry spend huge amounts of money on campaign contributions? Any connection to the fact that not one Republican candidate for president thinks and agrees with the scientific community that climate change is real and that we have got to transform our energy system?
Yeah, there might be a connection, but we'd appreciate it if you didn't say it out loud, Bernie Sanders.
Big moves for the U.S. auto industry. Both General Motors and Tesla have announced that their next generation all-electric long-range cars, which can go over 200 miles on a single charge, will come in at a game-changing price of $30,000 or less, thanks to a rapid decline in the cost of batteries. That's with state and federal tax incentives, but it brings the cost of an all-electric car in line with the average price of a conventional gasoline car.
When's that new Tesla come out?
2017.
We could use a game changer around here.
Finally, the largest natural gas spill in U.S. history has finally been stopped. Southern California Gas Company, responsible for the massive natural gas leak from an underground storage facility in Porter Ranch near Los Angeles, has announced it plugged the broken well after 4 months. It's the first step in plugging the leak for good, and it's cost the company nearly $1 billion so far.
So sad. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget you can download our reports anytime from Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes. Find us and follow us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
And breathe, just breathe. Oh, breathe.
Yeah, I love that Appalachian, that Appalachian thingamajig that Hillary's got, because, well, you know, once again, she missed it. Swing and a miss. Mm-hmm. Because there's a whole lot of people in Appalachia who aren't going to be helped by helping out-of-work miners. Like people poisoned by mountaintop removal. I don't know if you saw it or not today, but the New York Times... Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Hour 2 of the Horn Titanic Tuesday, the 16th of February, 2016. New York Times had an editorial today about mountaintop removal. Once again, as they have done a number of times, and rightly so, once again critiquing the process as the nightmare that it is. And, well, dadgummit. They got it right, but of course, a couple of weeks ago, they endorsed a presidential candidate who said, has said, and I quote, in regard to mountaintop removal, maybe there is a way to recover those mountaintops once they have been stripped of the coal. You know, I think we've got to look at this from a practical perspective. Of course, the term they're using now is realistic, not practical. But back in 2008, it was practical perspective. And, of course, the whole thing, the New York Times editorial was about a report out of Duke University showing that the damage done in Appalachia by mountaintop removal is unfixable. And that horrible, horrible, horrible changes have been wrought here. By the way, I'm going to the phones here just in a moment. But you can't put the mountaintops back, Hillary. Because that's who said that. Hillary said that. You know, she's supposed to be the smartest politician who's ever trod the planet. You'd think that she would know that the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act is in the House of Representatives. It's an elegant bill. Nobody loses a job. We find out what's killing the hillbillies. And if it turns out to be mountaintop removal, we stop it. You'd think she would know about this. You'd think she'd call for an end to it. But then again, well, there's a lot of folks on Wall Street who are deeply invested in mountaintop removal. And in point of fact, people like Alpha are in bankruptcy negotiations. And some of those hedge fund managers and some of those Wall Street types are going to accept an equity position in Alpha Natural Resources in the reorganization in exchange for letting them continue to blow up mountains and bury streams and poison human beings. You draw your own conclusions. There's no practical perspective to mountaintop removal, but I do give her credit. At least when she went to Flint, she didn't tell the people there that they needed to be practical about being themselves poisoned. Let's run over to the phones. somewhere in Southern California. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Tracy, how are you?
I'm fabulous. So where do we start? Do we talk about how the Grammys totally dissed Maurice White? Do we talk about how somebody went off on me because I did? And this is your thought about what my Facebook page. It's your fault for putting Ding Dong to what you said at my fingertips.
Wait a minute. Are you telling me that somebody said that you were being disrespectful of poor little poor little Uncle Nino, cut short in the prime of life?
Yes. Yes. And so
That's okay. A lot of people got that. Oh man, I got that lecture. Give it a couple of days, man. I mean, his family's grieving. I had no reason to think his family was reading my Facebook. I even checked my friends list. I didn't have any Scalias on there.
Yeah, I don't think anybody in the Scalia family even knows Tracy Michelle Porter or Bob or Robert, whatever the hell your middle name is, Kincaid. I swear to Jesus, and I don't think that even if people retweeted anything that we wrote, that anybody from his family would
This is far past 7 degrees of Kevin Bacon that it, no.
Right. I'm like, seriously, dude, seriously? I mean, and anybody that, you know, so... Yeah.
Well, you know, but if you read your Bible, Tracy, you know that there's that verse there that says, "The concern trolls ye have always with ye."
Yeah. That Bible thing, and that's basically because you know, the person went off on me saying that I was a hypocrite, and this is why he's leaving the church, and blah. And I had to sit back and relax before I responded, and I think I did a pretty good job, basically saying "fuck you," without saying "fuck you." You know, it's like, it's my Facebook page, not a democracy, very much so a dictatorship. I make those decisions as to what I can put on my Facebook page. And basically, I'm like, and okay, maybe as a Christian, yes, I shouldn't have said that. But actually, I didn't say anything. I just put things on it, which is that. Yeah, you can give it a reference you want.
Oh, you did it without comment?
Yes.
You just posted it up on your page, and away you went, and people can take that for what it is.
Mm-hmm. I did say something about Scalia being, but I didn't say, may he burn in hell, that misogynistic, homophobic, racist piece of shit that he is.
Well, but you know, speaking of racist POS, I do want to... observe, and I made this observation first last night, you may have seen it, if death had not come for Nino on Saturday, he would have dropped right dead during the Grammys when they did the opening scene of Hamilton. The one with the Latino Hamilton and the black guy Aaron Burr.
And wait, don't get it twisted also. There was a black woman playing his mother. So it's like, wait, Alexander Hamilton a half breed? We know he wasn't, but
No, we don't. Well, I mean, kind of.
No, we don't. You're right. You know what? I was like, I'm going to have to ask Dr. Bill. And that was, I mean, because we don't. The man was born in the Caribbean, so hey. What's to say?
We're talking about a Caribbean that's been. Getting creolated for a rock solid 200 years before Hamilton gets born.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I'm sitting there mouth agape. Cause I'm like, first of all, it's a pretty damn cool thing. Watching, you know, having hip hop with, you know. American history.
Oh, I don't get to go to New York and see plays, and you don't get a ticket to that play right now. But I would love to see it because I think it has real value. Beyond how entertainingly it looks like it's been written and written and scored and staged. if you can take the, and I dare say Dr. Bill would agree with me on this, Tracy, if you can take the facts surrounding the founding of this country, complete with all its flaws,
all of them,
and you can make that accessible to a new generation of people who happen not to look like freckly, pasty-faced, red-headed Tom Jefferson, or squat, pasty-faced, mean little John Adams, or any of the rest of them, Hamilton, Burr. If you can make that history accessible to people in 2016, then maybe some of the more high-minded principles that arise therein that are noble, the ideas of self-governance, the idea of never again having to bow one's knee to anything deeming itself by some accident of birth to be royal, then you know, that becomes an agent of growth.
I hope it makes it to L.A. Dan and I are season ticket holders for the Pantages. And just actually, we're usually about a year behind. So
can we have a culture moment real quick?
Sure.
I've wondered about that word since the first time I ever heard Ricky Lee Jones sing "Chucky's in Love."
About Pantages.
What is the Pantages?
The Pantages Theater is like the oldest theater in Los Angeles. It's beautiful. It's Art Deco gone wild. And they sell, I mean, we have like this past season, the season that we're in now wasn't all that great. But last season we had Wicked, we had Kinky Boots, we had Jersey Boys. Quite a few good shows this past season, not so much. Except for I did get to see Idina Menzel, and don't ask John Travolta to pronounce her name, and If Then. That was in December, and that was just amazing. I mean, to hear her live, because I've only heard her on television, and I was just like, okay, Tracy, pick your lip. Off the floor, because you are, and the whole cast was just amazing. And if anybody has ever been to a Broadway show, and especially a musical, and because I've never, you know, I would never have thought I would ever see Idina Menzel live, because, you know, she's the East Coast and all that. So to be able to see her live, yeah, it was fucking amazing. It was just great. So yeah, it's a theater. It's beautiful. It is
okay, because like I said, oh God, what was it? 1979, 1980. Yeah, 1979 when that song hit. I'll tell you what, I saw him. He was sitting behind us down at the Pantages, and whatever it is, he's got up his sleeve. I hope it isn't contagious. I knew right then we were dealing with a songwriter. Anybody who can rhyme Pantages with contagious? I mean, this isn't Steve Miller rhyming Texas with what the facts is. This is a lyricist.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, Pantages and contagious. Yeah, no, it's one of the last grand old, because we used to have a what was the name of the theater that they tore down to build this monstrosity in Century City. I forget, but it was a gorgeous theater there too. It was in the ABC. It was back in the day was considered the ABC Entertainment Complex.
Well, the Pantages sounds like the LA. Well, it sounds like the Pantages is to LA what the Fabulous Fox is to Atlanta.
Probably no. It's a little bit more hostile because I've seen the Fox.
Okay.
It's a little bit more she. Or dare I say uppity.
Or as we say here in the hills, classy.
classy.
It's so classy.
It's so classy. So now it's a great, it's a gorgeous theater. Jay and I have been season ticket holders since we've been a couple. So like the last 3-4 years. So I'm looking forward to seeing what the 2016, because
I guess Hamilton's going to have to get to where you can actually get a seat at it before they take it on the road. But my goodness gracious, I would absolutely love to see it. I am not somebody who goes into musicals, because generally in my world, and I am just a realistic person. I can't help it. In my world, nobody breaks into song. Much.
Yeah.
but I've got a few that I love. There's a couple of musicals I'm really fond of. This one's got potential.
Which ones are they?
Well, Paint Your Wagon's one of them.
Okay.
Because it was such a sly way to work an environmental theme into musical theater.
Okay.
And another one is South Pacific, because once again, they slyly got Broadway musical audiences to at least consider the evils of racism.
And the effect of it on indigenous people and stuff like that.
And then there's another one frankly, it's kind of an intellectual godparent to Hamilton. There is a musical called 1776.
1776. Yes. I remember
and I
that,
love that
many
one.
Years ago. Did you ever get to see the Book of Mormon? Even though it's from the guy, you know, I don't like their politics, because I love, you know what I love about, because there's Trey Park, you know, the guys from South Park, and of course they're libertarians. I find it very interesting how most of the libertarians that I know are rich white guys.
Isn't that who that party's for?
Right. Isn't it amazing? It's very easy to be a libertarian and not care about government influence and stuff like that when you don't need government assistance or anything like that. And that just dawned on me the other day, because I was talking to my charge's mom, and we were talking about some of the conversations Will and I have, and she's like, oh God, I just hope he doesn't turn into a libertarian because of the way he thinks about freedom and stuff. And that's when it clicked. Well, he's a rich white kid. So of course, you know, Libertarian Party appeals to me. I mean, he doesn't seem like he would be a libertarian, actually. I think he actually has a brain. And I'm thinking, hopefully, my conversations with him and being indoctrinated, listening to the horn, hopefully that won't happen. One can only hope. But, when she said that to me, it was like, shit, which white guy? You know, isn't she?
Well, no, that gets a qualifier on it. Libertarianism is wealthy white guys who want to be able to smoke dope.
Oh! Okay. I forgot about that qualifier. My bad. That's my fault.
Yeah, they're mostly Republicans who want to get high.
Right. Okay. There you go.
I mean, that's why Rand Paul, Aqua Buddha, you know?
Right.
And
right.
By the way, the movie, the I cannot highly recommend the movie version of Paint Your Wagon enough, if only because you get to see one of the rare instances of Clint Eastwood singing on film.
Yeah.
And Lee Marvin's just wonderful.
But he's Lee Marvin. Lee Marvin can do this. Lee Marvin.
Yeah.
There's a certain thing. There's certain actors that the only thing they need to do is just stand there in the movie, and it's Don Cheadle, one of those people. Just him, his presence, he doesn't even have to say a word. He just has to stand there being Don Cheadle. And I'm okay. I'm good with it.
The venom that Lee Marvin injects into the simple four-letter word "dude" in The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance.
Oh God, yes.
See, this is why our conversations are such a freaking delight, Tracy, because because we can go all over the place, and somehow or another, it's all going to make sense. You just have to have the patience to hang on for the ride.
You've got to hang in with us. You've got to hang in there.
Tim wants to know, Tracy. Tim wants to know, was the theater you were talking about the Schubert?
Yes.
You know, I'm gonna know L.A. before I ever get there.
Well, like I said, the Schubert is no longer there. They actually almost try to tear, they tore that down, and they try to tear down the Hyatt Regency, where, you know, that's also a Century City, which is basically across the street from the monstrosity that they built in the place of the Schubert. And somehow that got saved. I think a lot of that to do, I think, because Kennedy has stayed there and Reagan and blah, blah, blah. That's usually when you hear when Obama's staying in Century City, at a hotel, that's the hotel he's staying at the Hyatt Regency. So there's that. But you know who else was another one that, you know, one of my favorite all-Western guys, Lee Van Cleef.
No.
That's all. Wow. Shit, yeah. See, he's, like I said, one of those people that could just stay, don't have to say a word, could just be in the movie. And it goes up, it goes up in caliber just because it's Lee Van Cleef and it's all about the character actors. You know, there's just certain people that just their presence, because like Don Cheadle, for example, did you see, I think that was maybe one of his first movies, Devil with the Blue Dress, with Denzel Washington?
No, I did not.
Okay, you have homework. You
okay.
You absolutely, first of all, are you a Don Cheadle fan? Do you
yes,
like
yeah, no, yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
I love good acting.
You must. It is a requirement. I don't know how you're going to do it. I don't know if it's on Netflix. I don't know. But you must. You must see Devil in a Blue Dress. Because you got, first of all, Walter Mosley, have you heard of any of his books or who he is or anything?
No.
Okay. He came up with this character, brother by the name of E.Z. Rollins. The movies and his books are set in post-war Los Angeles, where you see it's black people. Based, it's all about the central avenue, jazz scene. I mean, unfortunately, in the movie, they don't really go into much about it, but it's there, and it's more so in his book. But E.Z. Rollins, you know, he's from Texas, and he's just a brother that gets things done. And, you know, first of all, because I know you're a reader. So you have two assignments. You now have.
Oh no, I'm kind of in need of a new series to. I love, it's real white, but I'm a big Travis McGee fan. You know, John D. McDonald. So I love those. I love those serialized, and of course, the nights when Mr. Stress, Bill Miller, and I would talk about. John D. McDonald The Big Sleep, you know, those classic L.A. Yes. noir novels or.
This is an L.A. noir novel with black people.
I'm there.
So you must.
So you probably need to just shoot me an email so I can have a reference so I can run over and please, Jesus, let it be on Kindle.
Oh yes, I cannot imagine that it is not on Kindle. There has to be, but I believe he's written. I think there's like maybe six books in the series. So, and here's the thing: So there's a character. Now, in the book, well, I'm just going to read the book, but Don Cheadle's character's name is Mouse. And he's just, he's E.G. Rollins' homeboy from Texas. And he's another one. You call a brother up to get things done kind of brother. And let's just say that Don Cheadle, that's when I knew that Don Cheadle was the god, that he was an acting god, right? That movie. I don't know if that was his first movie, but I think it might have been. Because the movie, you got Denzel Washington, you got Don Cheadle, my girl, Flash fan, what's her name? Jennifer Mills.
Yeah.
You got Tom Sizemore, and I don't know if he was high while the movie was being made, more than likely he was. But he was, and we both know how scary, sinister Tom Sizemore can be. I mean, so you got L.A.
I want to go to the movies with you, Tracy.
Oh yeah, going to the movies with me is amazing. It's one of those fun things.
Cause see, I live in a cultural wasteland. So, God forbid, you know, if there's any. If there's a movie I want to see, it'll be here for 15 minutes and it's gone. I am still trying to see Birdman.
That's on Netflix, isn't it?
Is it? I went around looking to try to rent it, whatever. Nah.
I haven't seen it yet. Anything that came out in the last couple of years, because I don't know,
I guess Beckley is kind of like the rest of the country. If it doesn't make a lot of noise and a lot of crap explodes, it just doesn't stay in the theater very long.
And see, that's one of the beautiful things about LA. I mean, movies stay out here longer because you have so many, you know, there's so many theaters. Plus, we have dollar theaters and all those. So even movies that have been out for like 6-7 months, you can still see it up.
I still think back fondly to that lovely little community up in West Central Wisconsin called River Falls, where they've got it. It's just a little town with a little town movie theater, just one screen. But the person who owns the movie theater operates it at a loss as a community service, and runs first run movies. I mean, they come through. And. It charges $1 a ticket.
See, you know what, Bob? What you just said, people like that, I'd be dangerous if I had money because I would do stuff. I would do stuff like that. I would have movie theaters in the community so people could see first-run movies at it. Because I have money. I don't need to operate at a profit. I just want to make sure people get to see movies. And people can have jobs, and you know what I'm saying?
Oh, back in the day, I used to read Roger Ebert's reviews and go, not going to come here, not going to come here, never going to see it, won't be here. Although, moment of pop culture lowbrowness, and you can scream at me if you want to. I want to see Deadpool.
Oh, honey, I'm going to see it this weekend. Don't trip.
Okay. Okay, just checking.
No.
Margie is absolutely on fire to see it. I don't usually go in for the comic book movies, but everything I read says that everybody says this is a comic. I loved Guardians of the Galaxy.
It's an anti-hero. It's those people that right. Just like, I really am not a hero, but I'm just going to do but this is some bullshit, and I don't like the way people are being treated, and I'm going to do something about it. Much to my chagrin, and not really my better nature, but it just shows that when people, those kind of movies just show that when people get tired of bullshit, they have to act. Is that a pretty good summary?
Yes.
And yes. Because I think the reason why movies like Deadpool and Guardians of the Galaxy appeal to people like us, because we have that. Not so much because of our politics, but because of our upbringing, and we have this certain sense of fairness because that's how we were raised. And that people are supposed to do things a certain way.
Well, I'm also a sucker for an awesome soundtrack, too. And that was the coolest soundtrack since heavy metal.
Yes, it was. I have to say.
There was abject joy. There was abject joy for me in watching my kids, you know, coming into their 20s, hear 10cc's I'm Not in Love, and just sit there with their mouths hanging open, going, "This is awesome."
My son was the same way. But see, I have to qualify that. My son has a very eclectic, because listening to the kind of music that he grew up listening to with me. So, but even still, there's music. He ranges from Miles Davis to Casey and the Sunshine Band.
Yeah, see? And it's been a little bit, it's been a lot like that, because actually, Agnes and I have fairly, not wildly different, but she goes in for stuff that I didn't, and I vice versa, and we raised our children listening to all of this stuff, you know, going down the road in the minivan, and so, you know, with a smattering of, but I find myself, I've entered my geezerhood. Because I saw, and I need some help here. I saw a reference to the post Grammy parties last night.
And for Jesus, I had no idea who any of those people were that were nominated.
Well, okay. So I don't feel so bad, and maybe Michael and Madison can be some help here. But an artist by the name of Tyga, T-Y-G-A.
I think that's Oxy. I think it's Tiger. I don't know.
I mean, I'm assuming.
Mm-hmm.
For all I know, that could also be pronounced...
Tiger?
Depluradon. I mean, yeah. But he had a, or they, I don't know really, had a big post-Grammy party at some outfit in L.A., Hollywood, somewhere. And Paul McCartney and Beck and somebody else showed up.
And they didn't know who they were?
And they did not get in. They were not allowed in.
Well, that goes to show you, there was a song, I guess it was like a year ago, Paul McCartney did a song with Rihanna and Kanye West.
Oh, no, I remember that. Wasn't it so nice of Kanye to give that old man a chance?
Yeah, I think we talked about that. I think you did.
I think your conniption was on a par with mine.
Yeah, it's like, and I'm not even a huge Beatles fan. Let's, but however, it's fucking Sir Paul motherfucking McCartney. Okay, wordsmith, I need you to come up with that word. That's stupid, idiot, and
Oh, I think the word you're looking for is fuckwit.
Okay, a little bit more on the, I was looking for it more on the academic side.
Tracy, sometimes you bail on academic and just go straight for the visceral.
Okay, I mean, I could have said fuckwit, man, that's easy.
By the way, as far as awesome soundtracks go, Steve in New York is recommending See the Revenant, awesome in every way. I truly was in awe. By the way, Steve says, I didn't even know the Grammys were on last night.
And let me tell you, the only reason, because I don't typically watch the Grammys because, again, don't really care, except for I did enjoy Kendrick Lamar, and I've never heard of the brother, and I'm going to have to check him out more closely now.
But Maurice White did kind of take a beating, didn't he?
I love Stevie. First of all, how was he? There was no thought put into that. And then you have a whole, like a friend of mine, and no disrespect to my man, David Bowie. David Bowie was an amazing, a performer and all this. And I'm sorry, they could have shaved off at least 30 seconds from that. They could have shaved off at least 30 seconds from the Glenn except for the cooking. I don't think the tribute to Stephen King was perfection. That was perfection. But they could have, even still, they could have shaved off some of the time from those three tributes and gave Maurice White his due. And then also, you know, there was no, you know, Vanity, forget.
Well, but at least they called on Stevie Wonder and not Stevie Nicks.
They did call on Stevie Wonder.
And not Stevie Nicks. I mean, so, yeah.
At least, from what I hear, and I need to find that article, because, of course, there was a really good, they didn't even have a picture of, they were basically about to totally diss him until Grammy insiders were like, what the fuck are you doing? Are you serious with this shit? Are you really going to leave out 6-time Grammy winning Earth, Wind, and Fire, you know?
Yeah, because there would have been there would have immediately been a hashtag said dead Grammy so white, you know.
But it was
or so not white, so white, I guess. So not white.
You know.
Maurice White. You know, and I'm like, I mean,
yeah, so not white. God, you're smart. It took me a second. So, I'm sorry. I mean, Stevie Wonder was amazing, but could you imagine how much better it would have been had there been some production values in that? It's fucking Earth, Wind, and Fire, for God's sake. The soundtrack of my, I can't imagine anybody that is in our age range and older, but grew up listening to sounds from the Earth, Wind, and Fire. That was the soundtrack of my teenage years.
Oh.
But how did they? I was undone, Bob. I knew it was on, but I didn't realize, because they showed it twice out here. They showed the live taping of it, but you guys got the East Coast feed, and then they showed it again for the people who were out here who didn't get home in time to see it. So when I realized, because I was at the doctor's office, and thank you, TiVo, and I realized it, because they were talking about Kendrick Lamar. So I went on my phone and started taping it, not realizing that it was coming on again at 8:30.
Do you have a favorite Earth, Wind, and Fire song?
That's the Way of the World. Or no, that's the way is between That's the Way of the World and Reason. But this Earth, Wind, and Fire. How can you? Because there's this, you know, in September. As like I said, depending on how I'm feeling. But Reasons brings me to tears, you know. And then you hear, you know, September, you can't help but get up and dance, you know.
Play September and 35 Years of My Life Fall Off of Me.
Exactly. And don't forget Boogie Wonderland. I'm sorry. That's a bad ass.
Well, you know, for my money, though, Got to Get You Into My Life.
Yeah. See, I mean,
that's not a fake. I mean, it's not the fake, but, you know, it's pretty goddamn good.
Got to get you into my love.
The thing is, yeah, that's a cover, and it's very hard to take something that has already been made famous and turn around and reimagine it and make it an entirely different song that is at one and the same time every bit as awesome. It doesn't happen very often. It's kind of like the number of times that the sequel of a movie is better than the original. There's like one of those, and that's the Godfather series. And Got to Get You Into My Life is like that for me.
It's just when I listen to the thing for me about Earth, Wind, and Fire is that they were so unapologetically black. Those were some badass brothers, Afros. And all this just on it. And Maurice White, the man was a vegetarian before it was cool to be a vegetarian. Okay? All that drugs and all that shit, nah, you don't bring that into my house. You want to play the music, you want to be who you are and be an influence and just the man was amazing. So that is why I was just undone. One fucking minute? Seriously? It's just, and another thing, because like I said, very rarely do I watch the Grammys, but like I said, by the time I got home, I didn't get home until late, so it was halfway, it was almost over. So I went into the room, because John was tired, so I went to the living room and watched the other part of the first part of it, that we have this. And I was like, so I'm fast-forwarding through the, you know, and I saw the Stevie Wonder tribute, and I'm thinking, well, there has to be more than this. I'm thinking, well, maybe later on in the show, especially after, like I said, when they did the Glenn Frey thing and the B.B. King thing and the David Bowie thing, I'm like, okay, maybe they're just, they're going to end it with the Maurice White tribute. And they let them do, present the whitest girl of all time with the record of the year, what album of the year award. Geez. Really, guys? So that was that. And then, like I said, this is why I don't watch the Grammys. Because I was looking up the best new artist category.
Oh, you mean the kiss of death? You mean the kiss of death?
Yeah. For if you, but you know, maybe you, somebody should be happy if they never get nominated for that, because that's usually when they get, you never hear from those people again. But the fact of the matter is, not one person of color, not one fucking person of color. I'm not even saying black. I'm just saying a goddamn person of color. There was not one new artist that came out last year, however the, whatever the judging time is for the Grammys, not one person of color rated best new artist. But what was badass, though, what was badass, and I have to give Grammys the
I confess, I only watched clips. Did Kanye do anything?
No. He wasn't even there. Was he there? I don't even think he was there. I fast forward through everything, so I'm that's why I love my TiVo, and I like to fast forward through shit. But what I did, which was badass, on the best rock song or group or whatever, every person in that category, save one, was a man. I mean, it was a woman in rock. And the person that won was a sister. The name of the group, I believe, is Alabama Slide.
Okay.
I remember who you're talking to.
I know.
Again. But these, you know me, these are the things that I noticed. And the song is pretty cool. Again, I've discovered two groups or people that I'm going to check more into. Alabama Slide, I think that was the name of it, but the sister, Big Girl. Oh, and that was another thing. The women that were on stage yesterday that were singing and winning, not little teeny people except for Taylor Swift. They were real women.
Well, for me, the highlight of the evening was the Best Americana.
Which one was that?
Jason Isbell, Something More Than Free.
Oh, did you hear that kid, the 12-year-old on the piano?
No. Most of what I saw was a matter of clips and reading in the aftermath.
Right, and that's basically how I watched that too. But yeah, it was like I said, and I watched stuff like, because again, you know, because I'm black, and people say, "Oh, you're just being overly critical," and no, it's just the fact that I get so tired of people that look like me being left, or people who are brown or anything being left out, like our talent doesn't matter. And that annoys the fuck out of me. It absolutely annoys the fuck out of me. And it should annoy, again, more people that don't look like me. And until it starts to annoy more people who don't look like me, who are empowered to make these decisions, then it will be, I will be perpetually annoyed. It would just be my life for the rest of my life, because there it is. But yeah, that did annoy me. But like I said, Stevie did it great because he's Stevie Wonder. I'm not a crowd person, so I don't go to many concerts.
But I have been privileged to be, I have been in the presence of greatness. And only a few times in my life have I seen, been in the presence of greatness as far as concerts are concerned. I have seen Stevie Wonder in concert. I had box seats at the Hollywood Bowl and saw Stevie Wonder in concert. I have seen Ray Charles in concert. I have seen Gladys Knight twice in concert, and I have seen Etta James in concert, and I have seen B.B. King in concert. So I have been, you know, you don't get to see these kind of things often. And to be able to say, how many people can say that they've seen B.B. King in concert?
It is
especially my age.
Yeah, no, it's a limited population.
And you know who else I've seen in concert? Tony Bennett.
Oh, wow.
Yes, I have seen Tony Bennett in concert as well as Sir Tom Jones. And that's a whole other thing. I have this kind of obsession with Tom Jones. That's just a whole other conversation.
And I notice how your voice sort of, you know, trails away.
Well, I'm sorry. It's Tom Jones.
Is there a restraining order involved? Is that what we're talking about?
No. I may talk shit and all that, but I would never approach anybody and be that crazy that there would be a restraining order against me, because again, black people and the law, not so much. They wouldn't just restrain me. They would tase me and possibly kill me. So, you know, I take that very seriously on my interactions with or possible internet. I did kind of stalk Don Cheadle.
I don't know. Is there such a thing as stalking a little bit?
Stalking? Well, see, I wasn't. Okay, see how that. See, it wasn't stalking to the point that I did kind of trail off. I was driving, and I used to drive a cab in Santa Monica. I'm driving down the street in Santa Monica, and there's Don Cheadle. And I have to say that I did follow him for a little while, and then I trailed off. I didn't, like, take the cab in front of him and stop him and jump out the cab and throw him in the back of my cab and have a... I didn't do all that. I just saw, and I just admired it from a distance. I didn't roll up on the brother or nothing like that. You see? I have this, you know? And this is before Don Cheadle was Don Cheadle. So, speaking of movies that will probably never make it to your part of the woods, you know, he's playing Miles Davis.
Ooh.
Yes, as a matter of fact.
That makes more sense than Cuba Gooding playing O.J. Simpson, but yeah, never mind.
Yes, it does. I'm sorry. I mean, I have...
Wow, I didn't even realize there was a biopic. I live in a cave. I would stand in line for a movie like that.
See, and the only reason why I knew about it, because remember I said I'm not a big Miles Davis fan, because his music annoys me, because I think he's like, okay, I like your music, I'm good for about 5 minutes, even going into 10 music, maybe it's something of the music, but then you're going into 15 or 20 minutes and you're playing the same thing and you've lost me. My son over here, you know, and that's the thing with Coltrane.
Are you kidding? Bitches Brew, Sketches of Spain, Kind of Blue. Mm-hmm. No, I don't know. It's an attitude. Okay. Okay. I confess. You got me. The first time, the first time I ever heard Kind of Blue, there was a significant amount of, cannabis being combusted in the room.
And see, here's the thing, Bob. Never been a weed smoker. Seriously, I wish I could. I wish I had. I wish I had, because then it would explain some of my memory loss issues. So then I could say, well, at least I have a reason for it. I smoke too much weed, but I can't even say that shit. And so you have to be at a certain altered state to be able to listen to John Coltrane is another one. Same thing. It's like, dude, are you looking at your watch? And it's like, wait, he's still playing the same song. It's been an hour. But then again, if you smoke enough weed, I mean, like I said, I appreciate Miles Davis. because he's, you know, as he was, you know, you talk about a sinister looking dude.
Did you just say sinister looking dude?
Yes, it's a sinister looking dude. I'll say it in my Gallagher voice, sinister looking dude. Seriously. See? So Miles doesn't look like somebody I would cross. No. But Don Cheadle, and in your defense about you not hearing about the biopic, from what I understand, because this is where my son comes into play, because he listens to, you know, more independent radio than I do. And so he's more tuned in. And apparently it's taken a while to get to, of course, because it's Miles Davis. It took a long time to get the money together to do the movie and blah, blah, blah. And when Alex told me about it, it was about a month ago that he told me about it. And then they just had, or I don't know if the screening might have been just this past weekend. They had a screening of it with him, with Don Cheadle doing a Q&A after at the Pan African Film Festival out here in LA. And no, I've never gone. And I was going to go until I heard that it was now. The tickets were $90 each. And I wanted to go see it, but I know Jan would have cut me. I think I kind of could have convinced her, but then again, we just had to buy it. We just bought it. Bob, that's what I did yesterday. We put the stove on.
The stove is in.
It's not in because we're not moving until next week. We're not moving We're either going to be moving in April or May, but I wanted to make sure I got the stove at that price, so we put it in layer way. So basically,
magic is going to happen. No. Magic is going to happen in Cochina del Tracy.
Oh God, yes. And then yesterday, see, now we're back on food porn.
Oh, by the way, for people paying attention, the movie is Miles Ahead.
Yes.
And
I think it's going to be out soon.
Really? You and McGregor's in it? Son of a gun.
Huh. Who's he playing?
I think Dave Brill.
Probably. Who knows? Yeah. But just the fact, Miles Davis. Come on.
But hey, just one last. It was a big night for my hometown last night.
Why?
Because Jason Isbell won Best Americana Album for Something More Than Free.
Okay.
And we'll have one of those cultural crossover moments at some point when you listen to it. And the other the bluegrass album that won is called the Muscle Shoals Recordings. By a group called the Steel Drivers, and the lead singer of the Steel Drivers is also from my hometown.
So you had two home. Were your button bursting off your shirt?
Well, I was pretty proud when I read the list.
So that means if you have the list of the Grammy winners, then if you look for Alabama, I believe, like I said, Alabama Slide, and I don't know if it's more so. The song was funky. It was a mix of blues and rock and just that down and dirty honky-tonk. No, not honky-tonk. What was this place called back in? Because honky-tonk is middle white folks. Oh, damn. What were those places called back in the backwoods that the black folks went to?
Well, it was a huge night. It was a huge night for Jason Isbell. He co-produced and played on the Muscle Shoals recordings of the Steel Drivers. He won for Best Americana Album, and he won for Best Roots Song.
Okay, I have no idea what any of that means, but I'll go look it up.
Well, 24 Frames, the song that won, will give you chills.
Okay.
I may have to even like play it or something. I don't know.
Well, please do, because then it'll give me a point of reference. See, you know me. I need a point of reference. I have to hear, see, and touch before, and that's when things become real, or that I understand it better. if that makes any sense.
Oh, and I didn't realize this, but David in South Carolina just told me that Don Cheadle had to use GoFundMe to try to raise money to make the Miles Davis pick.
Yes, that's what I was saying. Yeah. That it took, you know, and that, isn't that some bullshit?
You mean that you can be Don Cheadle, walk into the studio and say, how about doing this? And they go, I don't know.
Right.
We got another comic book we want to make into a movie.
Right. And see, this is why it just amazes me that they even have, like, you know, the movie about Jesse Owens is coming out this weekend, Race. That movies like that even get made. And this is one of those things about the whole diversification of Hollywood. Because until the rich white old men that ran Hollywood start dying off, the ones that make the decisions, we will have amazing people like Don Cheadle having to do a GoFundMe. Well, hell, look how fuck fire. Look how long it took. And I don't even like Spike Lee all that much. But look how long it took me to get Malcolm X made. And there's only two movies that Spike Lee has made that I care about. Malcolm and Crooklyn. Those are the only two movies that he's ever made that I've ever seen.
Speaking of TV and stuff, tonight is episode 4 of Outsiders.
Seriously, I only have to see one episode because I haven't really been able to coordinate my time. But that first episode, the whole time I'm thinking about...
Oh, no, it's only getting better. Here's the downside. Only the first 3 episodes were viewable online.
So... Wait a second, but you know what? I have a DVR, so I just have to search and see when it's showing again, and I will.
Well, yeah. Well, it'll the latest episode will air at 9 o'clock your time on WGN America. Because see now it's
that's right. I was excited because remember I told you I wasn't going to be able to watch that show because my cable because Time Warner doesn't have WGN. And I swear to Jesus, that very day that you told me about it, I went home and I had a message on my TiVo saying that they just added WGN. I kid you fucking not.
Well, it's getting great ratings, and the first 3 episodes are largely exposition where you kind of get. You know, you know who the players are and everything, but at the end of episode 3, the most literate of the hillbillies came down into town to a town meeting talking about how they had to get them people off that mountain so they could blow it up. And he took the microphone and he said, any of you people come up that mountain, you ain't coming down alive.
You're not coming down alive. Because when I watched the one episode that I saw, they show, you know how they show clips of clips from upcoming episodes. And that was the last, any motherfuckers? See, let me put it in the way. Any of you motherfuckers roll up into my hood, y'all ain't coming back alive. I'm going to put, you know. Or you're going to come down with a serious limp. You know, you're not coming back the same as you went out. That's all I'm saying. So jump. You feel I'm talking about it's like a leap. What, Bob?
I know. The Alabama Shakes.
Alabama Shakes. That's what it was. Alabama Shakes. I'm being paged by the wife, so I got to go in the house.
I understand.
I have an assignment. I have to listen to. I will send you about Easy Rollins and Walter Mosley.
Right.
You have to see Double the Blue Dress and start reading the book by the same name and get into the Easy Rollins series.
and they listen to Alabama Shakes and Kendrick Lamar. So I know I'm giving you a lot of stuff. Another thing I have to do is listen to who?
No, but you're gonna send me an email and I'm gonna get on it.
Yeah, and who was the young man that you said that I need to go look on the list of people that won Grammy songs?
Oh, Jason Isbell. And the thing is, this won't be a kiss of death because he was nominated last year for an album called Southeastern that they kind of blew off, and he should have won for that. This was kind of a make good, even though not. But this album is magnificent, and he's only going to keep climbing. And you know, he's from home.
I like listening to
But if you listen to the song that won 24 Frames, that lyric will give you chills.
I will listen to that because that's like I said, this is why I love listening and talking to you because it gives we're not afraid of doing exciting things.
It's about expanding horizons. I mean, consider this. The line I'm talking about, you thought God was an architect. Now you know he's something like a pipe bomb ready to blow.
Oh.
And everything you know blows up in 24 frames. The reference to 24 frames being 1 second of video is 24 frames. So instead of saying in 1 second, he said 24 frames.
So 1 second of film is 24 frames. See, right there. Come on, player. Because so much can happen in a second.
Yeah, so when you hear it, I dare suspect you'll be a fan.
Like I said, if it hadn't been for you. See, I trust your judgment just on turning me on the outsiders. Because, man, I mean, just that one scene, that one episode that I watched when they were carrying on with the fire and fornicating and drinking and this cannot really be happening.
Yeah, I'm excited for them, and I'm hoping they get another season.
I don't know how close to, that's not that close to realistic.
It's entirely fictitious, but the underlying issue is very, very real.
Yes.
As the New York Times was talking about on the editorial page today.
Yet they endorsed Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, I know. I can't figure that out.
But I have to disagree with you on the practicality because, see, for Clinton, mountaintop removal, that's practicality because it's a practicality for her because she wouldn't have had to breathe out here.
Well, and there's and let's understand, for a certain class of people, blowing up and poisoning us here in Appalachia is practical because it makes money.
That's the
trick about mountaintop removal, Tracy. It doesn't employ very many people. You can take down 5,000 acres of Appalachian mountain in 5 years with a crew of about 10 people.
It's the same argument, wasn't that they were doing with that pipeline that was supposed to be trying to come from here to Canada, or Canada to here?
Yeah, all there was going to be jobs all over the place, except for the fact that there weren't. But if you do the math, which I'm not good at, but if you do the math on mountaintop removal and you find out how much money one mountaintop removal mine produces in a year, then you're talking about $50 million of profit being produced per worker per year, and you're paying him $60,000. Okay.
Right.
So the money is going into the pockets of A, the executives of the coal company, but B, it's going into the pockets of the hedge fund managers and the Wall Street investment banks and the European investment banks who provide them the capital with which to do this. So in March of 2008, you know, almost exactly 8 years ago, Hillary Clinton swung through West Virginia, and somebody at West Virginia Public Radio asked her specifically about mountaintop removal. And her response, and, you know, this is so classic, this is such classical Hillary. I am concerned about it for all the reasons people state. And back then they were talking about water, and we didn't have the studies out showing that people were being poisoned to death. But they were talking about how ugly it is, and filling in streams and burying streams and blowing up mountains and all. And so she says, I am concerned about it for all the reasons people state. But I think it's a difficult question because of the conflict between the economic and environmental trade-off that you have here. Now, again, I've already mentioned it only takes about 10 people to do one of these sites, and there's less than 4,000 of them in the state. You know, maybe there's a way to recover those mountaintops once they've been stripped of the coal. You know, I think we've got to look at this from a practical perspective.
It's called a ditch. Now, and I'm going to say this, and then I'm really going
But to I'm go. Glad that in 8 years she has evolved, because, you know, she can't get anything right the first time through. She has to evolve to it. But in 8 years, she's evolved, so, it, like I said, at least she didn't go to Flint and tell the parents there that they had to be practical about having their children's brains ruined. But what I want to know is why she can go to Flint and say that, and she's not worried about the little children breathing particulate cancer up hollers in Appalachia.
So, the one thing, and I'm really going to go, but I just wanted to see if I'm the only one that caught her on during the debate was that Thursday on how she was quick to fill in white people as far as how did she do it when she was talking about, I know it started off in the West Virginia thing, because Bernie Sanders was talking about African Americans and stuff like that, and people of color, and she did that. Well, white people matter too. And I can't remember when she said it or how she said it, but it was there. So, you know, let me calm down my white voters, because I don't want them to think that I don't care about, you know, that it's all about the black people, and which is not all about the black people. It's all about the poor people who don't have PACs and lobbyists and all these other people to speak on their behalf. But it was that thing that people do to discount or dissuade or take away from what's been going on and make it look like, well, it's just a phase. Now I got homework. Now I'm going to go watch it again. But it was just, did I imagine that, or?
I'm going to guess you didn't. But, you know, she is, as Carol Baker tells me, she is making what she calls, and I'm not saying that it's not a real thing, but she is making what she calls environmental racism a focus of her campaign. And environmental racism is something that is very, very real, and that I dare say we have known about here at the Horn, and progressives in the larger universe have known about since before some focus grouper political campaign advisor said, hey, Hill, talk about environmental racism. Maybe that'll make them forget about mandatory minimums. And back when you called them super predators. That's the thing, Hill. Environmental racism. Because this, of course, presumes that hers is a very, very calculated, ambitious, and cynical campaign. I could be wrong.
It is. It is.
I
could
is.
Be wrong, but see, well, there's not a lot of there's not a lot of see. But here's the difference between Flint and Appalachia, Tracy. There's not a lot of of threat to Wall Street in saying we've got to get the lead out of the water in Flint.
No.
There is a ton of threat to Wall Street. Money that's already invested, money that is already on the line in saying we've got to stop poisoning the little hillbillies.
Mm-hmm. And that's where it was. And I'm like, oh, you did. So on that note, I am out. I love y'all.
Oh, we just adore you, Tracy. Thank you so much for making my evening, because otherwise I might have still been listening to clips from that crazy little bastard talking about Barack Obama killing Nino Scalia with his Kenyan numerology.
I'm not even sure. Be well, and we will talk again.
All right, bye now, Tracy. Hey to Jan. Bye. The one and only Tracy, the lady cab driver. And let's go talk to Ron. Hey, Ron. Ron, where'd you go? Dadgummit, Ron. Okay. Well, if you do want to take part in the... there. Oh, no. Okay. Hey, I think this is Todd. Hey, Todd.
Hey, what's going on?
What's happening, man?
Yeah, I don't know about the Skype. Ron was on Skype when I was on hold. It was sounding like funny.
No. You were on the stress line. You're on the other line now.
Okay, I never got that straight. I may have it named improperly on my phone. Well, you and Tracy had a nice conversation.
Oh, our conversations go all over the place, but there's so dadgum much content in them.
Well, one thing you said something about like cultural exchange, and that's something that I thought about when you guys were talking. And it would be nicer if more people could do that.
Well, we're here every night.
Yeah, and Earth, Wind, and Fire. I didn't know you liked Earth, Wind, and Fire. That was a great group.
Oh, are you kidding? You
know? Yeah. So I think I remember All in All. That was my favorite album by them. So what you were saying about, you know, during that debate with Hillary, I didn't know that she said the same quote that you quoted about her and the mountaintop removal. She made the same comment during the debate. It was perfectly crafted. It was the same response.
Well, I mean, that's the heart and soul of her campaign. We've got to be realistic. I mean, it's kind of like when, in the last day or so when Bill Clinton called Bernie's supporters teabaggers. You knew that, didn't
you? What? No.
You didn't know that?
No.
Yeah.
What? I mean, really, when I heard teabag, I couldn't comprehend that yet. Could you repeat that, please?
Yeah. Bill Clinton said that Bernie's supporters are just like teabaggers.
Oh, man. Come on. All right.
Don't make me play the, right. Don't make me play the clip.
Oh, well, see, we're getting dragged down right where they... This is what I understand about a lot of black people here in South Carolina, right? Because they're all stuck on the Clinton still, but they're always 20 years behind. You know what I'm saying? And they don't understand it really. They wreck the black community really. You know, they might have done something for a little while. They appointed some black people to some nice positions, but aside from that, that's ridiculous. Because remember, remember what he was saying about Obama when he was running. You know, they're quick to go in the gutter. Oh my God.
I've got the clip. Let's see if it'll roll. Don't take my word for it. This was yesterday. This was Monday in South Florida.
Okay.
You might want to get the hockey puck out if this thing will ever load. We got computer problems. Might take a minute.
It happens.
Here we go.
Mysterious that there are a lot of people that say, well, the Republican Party rewarded the Tea Party. Just tell people what they want to hear, move them to the right, and we'll be rewarded, except they didn't get anything done. Then that's going on now in our party. If you don't deal with the fact that we are politically polarized and we keep rewarding people who tell us things they know they can't do because it pushes our hot button, we can't go forward together.
So the point I get...
You got that?
Yeah.
So what he's talking about is the idea of, you know, having a transaction tax on Hillary's donors on Wall Street, which Bernie would use for tuition. And we can't have universal single payer because Hillary's already said never, ever. So, you know, we're just kind of a sort of broke down, shitty, hopeless America that can't do anything great anymore. Despite the fact that the wide world, the civilized world, the industrialized world, has almost uniformly some way of making sure that every citizen has access to health care and spends less than we do per capita to do it, Todd. Bill says that's something we know they can't do.
No.
And we can't go forward together as long as there are people out there saying that it's worth our effort to try to have single payer health care and make sure that we go back to, and that's an important part, Todd, go back to the day when we had free college tuition.
Exactly. See, people are, we've got like two or three generations out, and a lot of folks aren't paying attention to history anymore. A lot of folks just don't have the tools, because it's not necessarily how much education you have. It's about the type of education that you have, because once you get a certain type of education, you can learn how to do research. There's a certain way to do research, and that's why it's so important to listen to Dr. Bill, because there's a certain way to do research. You got to go to primary sources when you can and work out and look at bibliographies. When you start seeing a repeat, you find, well, damn, 10 out of 15 books on this one topic, they're all going to the same source. I'm trying not to get off on a tangent, but...
No, I understand.
People should be educated, right? So my point is, right now, I feel good, because I think we should all feel good, because obviously there is so much heavy energy, so much shit in the air right now. And this last thing with the Supreme, do you remember a couple months ago when I went off? I think I was talking to you about that Supreme Court justice who just died.
Scalia? I do remember, Todd. It was back when Scalia was talking about how black students would benefit more by going to colleges that aren't as demanding of them as the University of Texas.
See, I was ready to send him back to the Middle Ages to get piped. And I'm sorry, he's a family guy. He had a lot of kids, 9 children and everything, but... I mean, he's still a Spicoli dickhead, right? I mean, come on, at the end of the day, I'm going to tell you something. In my opinion, 3 people have ruined the crossover between this century and the last one. And that's George Bush, Dick Cheney, and that dickhead.
Well, amidst all the less savory thoughts that I engaged in when I heard that Scalia was dead, I did have one very serious thought. I thought of Dr. King. When I thought about Scalia dying, with all this stuff getting ready to come down the pike, I thought of Dr. King. The moral arc of the universe is long, but it bends toward justice.
It does. It takes a while.
And that was one of those moments when the moral arc of the universe passed through geometrically one of those points of justice.
Well,
and that's why the Republicans are having the shit hemorrhage that they're having right now. Because see, I got to thinking about it, Todd. When was the last time that there was anyone that you would even remotely refer to as a liberal running the Supreme Court?
Running the Supreme Court?
Yeah, Chief Justice.
It's not even set up for liberals to run. It's never been.
Well, I mean, that's a philosophical argument, but that's Earl Warren.
Well, yeah.
Who was, an Eisenhower appointee, a Republican, a former governor. Mm-hmm. Earl Warren. After that, it was Berger, and then the pillhead Rehnquist, and now that dead-eyed John Roberts. Balls and Strikes Roberts. And the right wing is having a hissy because they have had the Supreme Court for a generation, Todd. And they don't want to give it up.
They don't know what to do. And what about Thomas is not going to know what to do. He's rudderless now. What is he supposed to do?
Well, I think this would be a good time for him to just do what he's always done and do whatever Scalia did. Wow, that was mean.
Now, this is an interesting. Look at all. There's so many moving parts that are going on right now. This is really. It's almost like sports now, except it's real. In terms of South Carolina, right? Trump is, as I predicted, he's running through South Carolina like Sherman. So.
There's some South Carolina data out there now that will probably not come as a shock to you, Todd,
mm-hmm.
but it will perhaps to others. Trump is at 35% over 18% each for Ayatollah Ted and Little Marco. John Kasich has 10%, and Jebbia and Mumblin' Ben each have 7%. This is of course why Jebbia brought Dim Leader down there to try to rally the troops.
Bob, this is getting to be blood sport. The only reason I'm cutting in right now is because do you remember everybody said they were not going to pull certain people in. Hillary said she wasn't going to pull Bill in. He's there. And Jeb has pulled everybody but the dog. His mother told him, don't run. And then, you know, and then she just flip-flops. She's like, well, he's in it now. He can't be a loser. But you know what? I really, there's something going on. I made this prediction before, but now I have refined it. Trump, let me tell you, Trump does not want, he wants to win in a way. Now, he's already won. He's about to get out. And this is what he's going to say is that his business is suffering. Or that they're not. He's already said they're not being fair to him. So he's already setting himself up for an escape hatch, right, for a way out. Because what he's really doing, he has done, he's gotten free publicity to jockey himself and his companies or whatever he owns, if he owns anything, into a position to make a wall, which is going to have to be on the agenda because everybody's been talking about it. Because in other words, his personality will not let him be president. He cannot. His ego is too large for the Oval Office. It's too large for the White House.
Well, that's going to. That's a choice the American people get to make. I'm not being mean or anything, Todd, but you're acting as if the citizens of the United States have never before voted for a moron to be president.
Well, that's happened.
And granted, Dim Sun did not win, but he still wound up president in 2000.
Still is.
He got reelected in 2004. But hell, we can go back in history. The American people elected one of the most incurious dimwits ever to occupy the office in Warren Gamaliel Harding.
Warren G., yeah.
Okay, I mean, straight up idiot. But out of that polling data out of South Carolina, I thought you would like to at least have a little confirmation bias. Because the folks at Public Policy Polling, they asked some other questions besides South Carolina Republican are you going to vote for? They asked some baseline stuff just to figure out who the hell they're talking to. So of the Republicans that Public Policy Polling interviewed for this poll, 30% of all the Republicans in South Carolina, because this is a statistically relevant study, poll, 30% of the Republicans in South Carolina yearn, that the South had won the Civil War.
Oh, yeah.
Now, that's not a poll that was taken 100 years ago.
No, that's
not
correct.
That's not a poll that was taken 50 years ago or even 25. That's a poll that was taken last week in South Carolina. 30% of Republicans wish the South had won the Civil War.
And connect the dots. What does that mean?
Trump voters? That 35% of Republicans who say they're going to vote for Trump in South Carolina? 70% of them say that the Confederate flag should still be flying over the state capitol in Columbia.
Exactly. The racism in Trump outdoes the Yankee, and they still don't like Yankees here. Like, the worst thing you can do is say you're from New York or Jersey or something.
Now I told you that 30% of the Republicans said they wish the South had voted for the Civil War. When you're talking about the Trump followers, the Trump voters, that rises to 38%.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you're also talking about the Trump voters, there are 38% who aren't sure who should have won the Civil War. Those fuckers are going to get a vote.
How can you not? Well, no, I know how. See, you have to understand.
Well, I mean, they get to vote. It's legal. I mean, you know, they're free, white, and 18.
Well, just like where Hillary Clinton went a few days ago in Denmark. Now, I had to go there for jobs a couple of years ago. I'd never been there before. That is a true deep south with the Spanish moss and the big oak trees. Plantations are still there. You can see them from the highway. And there's nothing there for people. There's only old money. You see, a lot of people don't remember, but a lot of people don't understand in the Deep South, especially here, because, you know, South Carolina has Charleston, right? That money from slavery, it didn't just disappear. See, it did not. You have you didn't see how many Maserati dealerships are in the state. There's more than two, more than three, right? There's a lot of money in the state. But it's concentrated in a very few hands, right? And they're the people who run everything. They make sure they know exactly how many voting machines are going to put in each polling place. That's why they have these funny open primaries. I could go and vote Saturday. But what would happen is that I would go in there, and they would look at me, and they would know I was not a Republican, or they would highly suspect it. And, you know, it's just, you know, in a polling place, especially in a small town, you probably know everybody. So you can do it, but do you want to do it? Because, you know, you can do that if you want to, you know, mess with the numbers. Because this is dirty politics here. These people send out fake ballots right before the election to old people. Because they have all the lists. They know how old somebody is, all the demographics. So they'll pick out a weird ballot to send to an older person. You know, in other words, it won't look like the ballot on a machine. But.
Well, it's... it's only going to get nastier.
Is Ron trying to call you?
No.
Okay.
I mean, he'll jump on. It's only going to get nastier, though, Todd. The Clintons are going to get nastier. The Republicans are going to get nastier. I mean, my God, I presume you watched that, or at least saw clips of that riot in a circus tent that passed for a pageant Saturday night.
Now, see, this is the thing. First of all, yes. Now, second of all, everyone who's listening, once in a while, you know, when you see these people, even after you've watched the debate, watch it without the sound on. Look at people's body language. Now, you would listen to it with the sound on first. But compare the debates. Compare the debate between Hillary, and that was a debate, between Hillary and Bernie, that was a debate. Now, these jokers on the right, I don't even know what these people are supposed to be leaders of the quote-unquote world. That's the best that they can fucking do. I mean, really, are we moving it?
What we've got here is a Republican Party that is a... and I've conjured up this image in the past.
About my mother. I'm my mom. It's just fucked up. Go ahead, Bob. I'm sorry.
Now we're talking about a mastodon in a tar pit, screeching and hooting as the goo begins to rise toward its head and will eventually subsume it, or it will eventually be subsumed beneath it. The Republican Party is dying as we know it. It is transforming before our very eyes into a brutal, ultra-far right-wing expression of the ugliest fascist desires that have always lain somewhere just beneath the surface in this country.
I agree.
And that's why they can't produce a statesman. There are no Republican statesmen, and I use that in a non-gender specific way. None. I hear and see rumors that this is all being played out like some sort of dumb show for the groundlings, and that by the time they get to their convention, there will be a quietly brokered convention in which Willard White Horse Romney comes in to save the party and the nation, and that this time, after 8 years of that one, America will come to its senses and finally allow that man to live out his destiny, and, as his wife says, we'll be so lucky to have him be president. I mean, that's out there.
Like the Great White Hope, right?
Well, the white horse of Mormon philosophy, of Mormon prophecy.
Mm-hmm.
When the Constitution is hanging by a thread, that's how that crap starts.
Well, see, you're starting down a whole rabbit hole there, because there's a big faction of Mormons in the FBI and upper law enforcement, especially out west.
Well, they're all over the place.
But the
thing is, that's the closest thing they can come up with for a statesman, and all he is an ignorant rich man. He just happens to know which fork to use with the shrimp. But the Republican Party is a madhouse. What makes it dangerous is that a whole lot of the rest of this country, Todd, is a madhouse too.
I agree.
Let me share something with you. Agnes sent this to me. And she screenshotted. So there's this story, and it comes from IrishCentral.com. Irish watch in disbelief as Trump leads U.S. election, and it defies logic. Somebody posted, and she read, and I said, oh my God, you're going to send that to me. Obama's administration in fear of your property and children's future, you'd understand. We love Donald Trump because he has his own money and won't be using our tax money for extravagant dinners and trips while allowing the lower classes to sink into a despair of lost hope and the horrible problem of drug abuse over here. And don't get your knickers in a knot. It's not all immigration that is a problem. He won't be using our tax money. Oh, no, that's, no. It's not all immigration that is a problem. The attack is on those who disrespect our immigration naturalization policy, which does still exist, period. If you don't want us starving and rushing back to our homelands, then mind your own business. It could always be worse. A party of madmen would be a joke if we did not live in a country of madmen. In 1968, Lyndon Johnson pointed out that there were more guns in America than there were American families. It hasn't gotten better. It's gotten worse.
This is gun sense. These guys, over there in Gilbert, whenever you see the GOP people over there in Gilbert, that's Lexington County, which I always talk about. That's deep in the heart, as they all say, man. That's hardcore over there. Right? They have more guns than children. Like people collect coins and everything. You're not a household unless you've got at least, 10 guns.
I'm glad you're there. I'm glad you can be our correspondent on the ground in South Carolina. Keep your head down, for God's sakes, Todd.
All right.
But call in with a dispatch from time to time. This is getting more than interesting. Well, hey, who am I kidding? This is getting terrifying.
All right.
Take care, Todd. Later.
All right.
Our buddy Todd down in South Carolina. Yeah, I guess it's interesting down there. I don't know what it would be like to be in an Iowa or a New Hampshire or a South Carolina or even a Nevada. By the way, have you seen all the videos going around? Isaac sent me one from Las Vegas. People trying to get into a Bernie rally. The people were lined up almost, it looked like, for a mile. All the way down a sidewalk and around the next block and around the corner. And, newsflash, Bill Clinton, it's not because they're a bunch of freeloaders who want free stuff. And memo to Hillary, you might want to put a leash on the big dog and get him back up on the porch, because Hill, can I call you Hill? Hill, if you happen to win the nomination, you're going to need us. Because you have some of the highest unfavorable ratings of any person ever to run for president. And that means you cannot afford to piss off not one single voter who could potentially be a voter for you. So you might want to tell Bill to stop calling us or comparing us to the teabag. We're intelligent, we're informed, and we actually have a vision for America that is far greater, ma'am, than anything you do. It's an America with equal opportunity for all that extends all the way past college. It's health care. It's an America that you grew up in, but nobody much has seen since. So, unless you want him to do to your campaign what he did back in 2008, I would teach him the meaning of those four short, small letters, STFU. Okay? Oh, and thanks to Paul. Paul, thank you very kindly. You're the only one to chip in this evening during the live program, and it's much appreciated. We now have $110 to go in fundraising this evening. Thank you very kindly, Paul. Hey, Ron.
Hey, Bob.
Cheers. That's worth having the video for. That looked like two fingers the way I want to pour them. Vertically.
Yep. I'm trying to kill a cold. So.
I always heard feed a fever, Mickey Finn a cold. So I think you're on the right track.
Well, my body may not be improving rapidly, but my state of mind is. So. Yeah, it's all that's required.
Yeah, the give a damn is taking a beating.
Yeah, I sent you a note earlier. Fortunately, I was watching Fox. It's a bad habit of mine. And
you know, that'll make your brains leak out your ears.
That's right. But they were covering Obama's press conference, and he made the comment. I think he was talking about how he'd been quoted as saying that Trump would never be president. And he went into some of the background of why he felt that way. But he said, I believe most Americans, at the end of the day, I'm paraphrasing here, will realize that the president has a tough job. And part of that job is, and he went through a whole bunch of things, like sending 21-year-old American citizens into firefights, etc. And he said, part of the job is worrying about and dealing with the issues of those people who are facing powerful political opponents and have no voice of their own. And I instantly thought of all the people that have been sucked into believing in the war on coal and the fact that 20,000 jobs in West Virginia is worth trashing the lives of everybody else in West Virginia.
Not even that many.
And if he feels that way, why hasn't he done anything about it?
Well, there's the $64 question. You got an answer?
Nope. Overtaken by events, that would be the polite way of saying it. He's been...
Didn't have a Congress to work with.
There is that.
That might be part of overtaken by events above.
And I'll try to refrain from the normal military acronym that stems from that. But aligned with that, can you give me any rationale for why the Supreme Court would have issued a ruling on Obama's EPA ruling power before it had made its way out of the appellate courts?
No, in point of fact, everything that I've read about that ruling, because first of all, you need to understand, it is just a preliminary injunction. It's not a ruling on constitutionality. They were just saying, don't.
It sends a message.
Well, sure it does, and it was in large measure, according to the experts that I've read, unprecedented, Ron.
Yep.
Courts don't generally do that with a piece of federal legislation. Or rulemaking, regulatory stuff, and it was subject to a vote by that court, and it was the rats and the Kennedy guy who voted to stay it. So that pretty much means that they had their minds made up that they were going to kill it, so that people can keep breathing the particulate matter that kills them every year to the tune of about 40,000 people a year, last I checked.
And it also sends a message to those lesser beings in the appellate courts.
Well, yeah, it does. I mean, well said. If you're an appellate judge, why are you going to rule on something that you know that the rats are going to strike down? And here's where it gets even more interesting. The workings of the Supreme Court are mickle mystical. You don't get to use mickle in radio every day.
Not often, no.
But apparently, when an argument is had, Ron, they then leave the bench, and they go back, and they vote They discuss the case, and then they vote on it. So, in other words, anything that's been argued has already been voted on. The look them up. So anything that Aaliyah, I don't know why I keep wanting to elide Alito and Scalia. Yeah, wishful thinking, maybe. Anything that Scalia heard, he voted on. And it's after that vote is taken that they begin circulating draft opinions. And yeah, so here's the rub, though. If somebody gets on the court, they have a right to an opinion, too.
Absolutely. And you'd defend that to the end of your days.
Well, absolutely, because but check this out. Think about the allegations of voter fraud that attend the right wing's fascination with voter ID laws and various forms of voter suppression. What's one of the things that they worry about? Well, and you being a West Virginian, you're probably familiar with some of this because it has happened here. It reportedly happened rather frequently in the Democratic primary of 1960. And that would be voting by the dead. There is no, and Chicago, whatever, there's no greater example of voter fraud than having people vote in the name of people who have already shuffled off this here mortal coil.
Well, there is some obtuse logic that applies to that, is that if you pay for the funeral, you've got the right to vote them the way you want for the next 15 or 20 years.
Oh, I know. But seriously.
Oh, I know.
What you have, if...
Pints of whiskey, same deal.
Yeah, Four Roses.
Yeah.
But if a case on which Scalia voted is allowed to stand, then that essentially means that a Supreme Court case was decided on a dead man's vote. Now, please explain to me how that is even remotely resemblant of a democratic process.
It's not a vote until it's been published, is my understanding. If it hasn't been announced, his vote doesn't count. Which is why you're looking at some stuff that may end up now being 4-4.
Well, that's what I would hope.
Yeah.
But I'm far from convinced of it.
I don't know that it's ever been codified, but if he is not alive when the decision is published, his vote is not counted. If he had voted for something that's going to be published in a week or two, and it was 5-4, he's now checked out, shuffled off his mortal coil, gone to his long home, et cetera, et cetera.
Hooray! Silver cord, golden bowl, all that crap.
All that crap. It's now a 4-4 decision. And the ruling in the lower court stands, whether we like it or not.
Well, the ruling in the lower court for that circuit.
That's right.
But there is no constitutional precedent.
But Charlotte, what a web you weave.
I tell you what, I think it's time to take Wilbur to the fair. Or maybe... Maybe we could say that last Saturday Wilbur went to the fair.
Yeah. Well, I got to start calling in earlier, Bob, because we run out of time way too damn fast.
Well, we do, but I have to. When do you head over to the sandbox?
We've got an email today that suggests it'll be signed. The contract will be signed by the end of the month, and I'll be there a week later to lay the groundwork for all the people that are going to come 2 weeks later.
Okay, so we've got a little time to work this out.
Oh, yeah, we do. And maybe my cold will be gone by then, or that dry desert air will get rid of it when I arrive.
It'll fix what ails you. You know, 40 below ain't good for head colds.
And the 20 inches of snow that I was shoveling earlier. We parked two cars in our driveway. They were about 3 feet apart. The snow service comes in, clear out the hump and the driveway behind the cars and all that. Not a long driveway. This is your basic suburban two-car driveway.
Sure.
And I went to shovel out the hump between the two cars.
Yeah.
So that when the guy with the blower and everything shows up, he can get to all that other snow.
Now, wait. I have to take a minute. I know we're running short of time, but you have to tell me about this this Canadian-style communism known as snow service.
Snow service. You pay a guy $300 for the winter. He shows up with a big tractor with a huge-ass blower on the back of it, scrapes the snow off your driveway, all the way up to your garage doors or to the 6 inches of the back of your cars, whichever comes first, and blows it about 100 feet away.
Oh, so this is, I'm sorry, this is free market, Canadian free market capitalism.
Absolutely.
Okay, I was worried. I was afraid that creeping communism had somebody out there actually blowing your snow for you.
Would that be a bad thing?
Well, I mean,
that's a rhetorical question.
You get that, and the next thing you know, you got universal health. Oh my God!
God.
But one last thing before you go, since you are our correspondent in the far north.
One of. Asa's yes, going to call Asa, in some yes. night.
One of these days, Asa will work up his courage.
Yeah.
And Asa would be the go-to guy on this, actually.
Well, Asa lives in the goddamn garden of Canada. He lives out on the wet coast in Vancouver.
And so...
Frickin' flowers coming up now.
and so there it is. The new little Marco Rubio's new Morning in America ad that opens with stock footage.
Sorry, I'm going to have to mute because I'm going to cough from laughter.
Yeah. That opens with stock footage that they paid $80 for.
Yep.
Of a tugboat.
Vancouver.
Looking at Vancouver.
Yeah.
So just to keep track, Ayatollah Ted hires strippers.
Yep.
and little Marco Rubio runs Morning in America ads that feature Canada.
And Jebbia recruits his brother, who looks like he was, all the video I saw that it looked like, I mean, I've seen cadavers look better than that.
Dim Leader was not looking good.
No.
I think he's been huffing the linseed oil in his oil painting studio.
Nah, his whole health status looked like he'd started slow today and tapered off. It was not pretty.
You can't do that in the last 30 seconds of the program, Ron. Start slow and tape. Oh, with that, we quit.
Okay. All right. I give full blessing to that to my grandfather. Bye, y'all.
See ya. Oh, the one and only Ron from the far frozen north. It is time to get out of here, but before we go, thank you very kindly to our dear friend, our good buddy, Gary, Laborman, who just took up the slack for the other $110, and we are even for the evening, and we are even through the first two broadcasts of the week. Thank you very kindly, Gary. And thank you to Paul, and thank you to everyone else. Thank you, Janie. Thank you to all of our subscribers. Hey, subscribing's easy. And, you know, you can pick the amount. It's over at headonradionetwork.com/contribute. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Lottie and Sparky, our moderators in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And, yes, always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.